Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hey, y'all. I want to let y'all know that you can get more small doses. Yes, I am now doing weekly small doses bonus episodes, and they are for my people at the SEAL Squad. So if you ain't getting enough of this, baby, there is more for you. This is a little taste of what you're getting.
The last few days, it has been a really interesting time. So I went on Club Shay Shay, and I talked about this a little bit in Morning Musings, but I gotta say, it was a very roller coaster of an interview, and I genuinely feel like he had no idea who I was before somebody told him that I should come on his show. That was the impression that I got. I got the idea that he put together what he thought of me based on probably like a Google search of the last month, which if that's what you're basing it on, you're gonna get a very, very skewed version of, you know, of me.
A spoonful of sugar makes all that go down. And let me tell you something. I'm having a great time getting to be more connected with y'all because when we do the Small Doses bonus episodes, we do them live. So you get to be in the chat interacting with yours truly. So if you've been thinking about, do I want to join Patreon? Now is the time. Become a member of the SEAL Squad and expand your love of the Small Doses. Get you more doses, Small Doses bonus episodes at patreon.com.
Self-help from the hip.
Small doses.
We're talking that shit.
Small doses.
And keeping it real.
Small doses.
With me and them seals.
It's so funky.
So I knew that at some point I would want to do this episode. And it felt like now I was ready. This is Sexual Violence Awareness Month. And it's a topic that is still so taboo on one hand, but also it's just simply not respected, the terror that women go through. And I knew that I would want to share my own story at some point. And I want to give a trigger warning to anyone who is listening or watching that this is an episode that will discuss themes of sexual assault. And if that is a trigger for you, then this is a good time to stop and perhaps come back to this at a time when you may feel a bit more sturdy when topics like this are discussed. I think that for me, this experience was... it was more devastating because of the aftermath of it than simply the experience itself. And that's something that I would never have counted on. It really awakened me to the myriad of ways that people simply just don't know how to respond. It awakened me to the disconnect that so many people have from emotions and feelings. And it really showed me that we have a lot of work to do simply just as a society in how we show up for people, what that means, what that looks like, what urgency there is in showing up. You know, I'm going through this entire experience of being just admonished and excoriated by the internet and by Black media. And I had so many people that were just really kind and beautiful in there talking to me. But then you would have people that would say, how can I support you? And I would tell them exactly how they could support me, like exactly how. And they would either just not do it that way or simply just not at all. And I found that so offensive. I found it so offensive because I wasn't even asking them to support me. But if you're going to extend that offer, then understand that it's an urgency to it as well as an expectation that it will happen, right? Like you want to support someone as soon as possible. in this experience, I had a similar dynamic take place where I marveled at the inability for people that I know consider themselves to be very conscious, very woke, very supportive, very emotionally intelligent people seem to be simply just without the tools to fashion a safe space for embrace. I was in a hotel in a villa with my ex. We were asleep. And this happened on January 2nd of 2023. Before we had went to bed, we had had a conversation that it was a personal conversation, but it made my ex, he just didn't want to have this conversation. It was a very necessary conversation, but he didn't want to have it. And so we did not end up sleeping in the typical embrace that we would sleep in. And he was over to the left of the bed and I was to the right. And the villa itself was small in that the bed took up literally 8/10. I'm not good on fractions, but 8/10 of the room. And there was a small kitchen. When you come in the entrance, then you pass by a sliding glass door. You're walking now around the bed. There is a large glass window that looks over to the ocean. And as you walk around the bed to your right, you find yourself now in the bathroom. So I was on the right-hand side of the bed and I was asleep and found myself awake in my dream. I awakened in my dream. And in my dream, I felt uncomfortable. It's just like I felt like off, like something is off. And the feeling was so off that it then jostled me out of my dream and into that like half awake space that you find yourself in when you haven't opened your eyes yet, but you know that it's inevitable. And I realized that there was like something happening between my legs. And my consciousness is trying to gather itself. And I thought like it was Devon maybe. And of course, there's a staggeringness to my consciousness. Like when, you know, you're trying to make it up the steps to your dorm after a drunk night and you have enough, you have enough awareness to know I got to get there, but your body is like, yeah, but we're impeded. And that was what sleep was doing. It was impeding my ability to truly have an awareness of what I was feeling. So this time, and you know, in dreamscape and in half awakeness, I'm not even sure how long time was, but I mean, it felt like a really long time. And then I opened my eyes. And when I opened my eyes, I looked up and there was a man standing over me with his shirt tied around his face, his locks sprouting out the back of his head like the singular fronds on a palm tree. And he had no shirt on and shorts. And he was darker skinned, so I could only really see his silhouette against the twilight of the night. And I realized that this is who's inside me. His hand was inside of me. And I, in my coming to, I guess I constricted and he, you know, pulled it out, his hand out, and I just started screaming bloody murder. He had come in through that sliding glass door that was still open. So he was able to sprint out of there. And Devon now wakes up only because of the sound of my screams. He jumps out of the bed and he too is disoriented. And I then realize there was a man whose hand was inside me just now. And so the violation of that then brings a whole other flood of despair. And Devon, in his trying to get his wits about him, sees what he thinks is a person, but what truly was a shadow, ends up punching the wall and wails in pain. And it brings me out of my own pain. And he comes back to the room, to the bed, and I see that his finger is dislocated. His pinky finger is dislocated. So I then shift my focus from myself to him. I'm not sure how I know how to set a dislocated finger, but apparently I know how to set a dislocated finger. So I set his dislocated finger. I then found a smart, funny, and black pen in my backpack, dismantled it, and used the tubing as a splint and splinted his pinky finger. His knuckle was also clearly affected because there was swelling that started to happen. He didn't even see the person. So I then begin to shudder at what has just taken place. And it's probably around 3:30 in the morning. And the villas that we're staying in don't have an overnight receptionist. But I knew the owner, so I called him. And he didn't answer. Not surprisingly, it's 3:30 a.m. But what it meant was that we were left to gather ourselves in that terror of a space. I call my mom. I wake her up. I tell her what happened. My mom is not somebody who is very in touch with her emotions. So a lot of times things are delayed as she is going through the path of picking up her consciousness of something and her emotions as individual pieces of baggage. So first she received the information and then she began to kind of try to offer some sort of consoling. But it's not really her bag. It's not really her bag. So we fall asleep. I had texted the owner, and by the next morning, he calls my phone and asks, you know, what's going on? And I tell him, and he comes to the room. I also call my uncle, who is a former judge and has always been particularly harsh on sexual assault. So the owner comes to the room and I, not surprisingly, am very disoriented is not the word. It was more so just disconnected, maybe. Well, you're there, but you're not there. I was sitting on the floor with my knees to my chest. I told my uncle the brief version of what happened and he said he was going to come get us. Because there was no way that we were going to stay again. And we were leaving the next day. So when the owner came and I was sitting with my back against the wall on my knees to my chest, because that felt like the safest position to be in, he began to question me. Not out of concern for me, but it seemed like he was more out of, I don't want to say disbelief, but there was just an intimate lacking of intimacy. And I never will forget him saying, so he didn't steal anything, in this thick German accent that he has. So he didn't steal anything? I'm like, I mean, yeah, he stole my safety. Oh, well, yes, of course. You know, I don't know how to do a German accent, but it was as if he could not literally grasp that someone would come to the room for this act and not leave with something tangible, physical, as if this act isn't enough of something to leave with. as if the violation of my body, of my space, of my safety, as if that was not enough of an object to possess. He couldn't seem to grasp that, because what's the value in that? And my ex is not a very outspoken person unless he is defending himself. When he feels like he needs to defend himself, he has no problem raising his voice and stepping in and really just causing a disruption. And he, for what it's worth, always feels like he needs to defend himself. However, you know, in this situation, it would have been nice to have a voice raised in my protection from this amateur interrogation that was taking place across a king-size bed in a villa.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
I've always thought of Black media as a place where we are represented and also protected, as a place where we are uplifted and empowered. And I know that that is sometimes more shown in potential than in actuality, but on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, we get to see it in real time. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. When you're a person like me, you are fortified. You are somebody who seems to, and I say seems to always have it together. Even when things are falling apart, you somehow manage to keep things from bursting at the seams. This ends up working against you because people seem to always think that you don't need them. People seem to always think that you are invincible, that you are impervious to harm. And we already know that there is something about this that is applied to Black women in general. But even in the personal space, there seems to be this thing where folks really just think, I don't need assistance. I don't need to be held. I don't need to be embraced. I guess that's the same as held. And so often I am embracing myself. I am working through it in my mind because no one is allowing me to talk to them, or no one's even that really interested in me talking to them to talk through it. And it is no surprise that Devon saw himself as a victim in this situation as well. And I'm sure many of you do too, as is fair. But I do think that there was something to be said for the violation of my body and how dismantling that can be. My uncle arrives, and so now we're all here in this room, and the owner essentially leaves like, well, I mean, how did this happen? And, you know, we said that they came through the glass door. And he said, well, was it locked? And I mean, obviously it wasn't. And he leaves. And I will say, you know, my uncle really did show up in a manner that was what was needed. You know, it's like the right amount of reverence for the immensity of the situation, for the immensity of the transgression. And what that does is when people do that, it affirms your pain. It affirms your consternation. It is congruity of affect. So we pack our things and we go to my uncle's spot. And again, I go into caretaker mode because that's really who I am. And I'm wanting to make sure that my ex, I'm wanting to make sure that he's okay. And I'm looking at the hand swell. And I know that we are supposed to go to Kenya the next day. So the conversation now becomes, well, what are we going to do about this hand? Is it fractured? And how do we find out? So I reach out to some other people that I know, and we are able to go to a clinic and get seen. And I got to tell y'all, I mean, I really do marvel at my resilience, because I've always wondered what happens when people have experienced something like this, like what happens to your brain, your heart, your spirit. And I somehow was still stitched together and able to be there and show up for homeboy while he's getting examined. And, you know, they were saying, well, he would have to get x-rays, but then we'd have to go to this place to get x-rays. And he just decided he didn't want to do that. That night, I found myself beginning to doubt. And I don't know if others who have experienced sexual assault have done this before. I'm sure this is a norm, but you start to doubt the reality of what you experienced, almost as if you think, I must have made this up. And I've heard before from a therapist that your brain will go into denial to handle that which it cannot manage at present. And I feel like that's what was happening. My brain was actively trying to convince me that this could not have happened. I mean, he didn't even see dude, but I mean, maybe you really did just dream it. I mean, you do remember being in a dream state, but even when I would say that to myself, I could feel the hand inside me. As I sit here today speaking to you, I can still feel it. I can see him. I could draw the scene. I could recreate it. And so I began, you know, so I'm going back and forth, you know, I'm on this pendulum of, well, maybe this didn't happen, but then how could you have such a clear rendering of this? How could you have such a clear rendering of this if it didn't happen? Yeah, but how? No. I got a call from the receptionist at the villas. And she said that there were cameras by our rooms and that she was working on pulling the footage and that she would get me the footage. She also asked if I could come back and pay the bill. Mm-hmm. I was livid, infuriated, to say the least, at this request. Of course, I know this request isn't coming from her. And I said something to the effect of, what the hell are you talking about? What would make him even consider that appropriate? And she said, well, he said, since you left the door unlocked, it's your fault. I left out that we did call the police and the police did come. I don't like the police. I don't trust the police. I don't believe in the police. However, it's protocol. And when the police came, the investigator was a woman. And she just began to start speaking to me. And I said, I need you to pause real quick. And she was a bit taken aback. And I said, I need you to pause because I need you to understand and acknowledge that I'm having a human experience right now. For you, this might be just another stop in your day. You might have even had other conversations like this already today. But for me, this is the first time this is happening to me. And I need there to be some semblance of regard for that, especially as that you are a woman. I need you to have a space for the human experience before the investigative details. And thankfully, she heard me. She heard me and she expressed her apologies for not only how she approached, but for this happening to me. And she asked me, how am I doing? So fast forward, this call about the rate. I cannot, the gall and audacity to ask someone who stayed on your property and experienced an act of sexual assault to continue to push forward and ask them to pay the bill is an act so bereft of morality that I find it unconscionable, truly. Now, this is someone who's known me since I was like 6 years old, by the way. I just don't know where your life goes, what road you travel down that lands you there in a place where your brain and your heart can contort into that type of darkness. But I don't want to go to there, I'll tell you that. And I never will. So I was, again, telling you that I was starting to doubt myself and really question the realities of what had taken place. And my mom was saying to me, you know, don't doubt yourself. Don't doubt yourself. But I know my mom. I know my mom. And I know that she can't like fake. Like she can't fake her feelings. Like, I mean, it's something, it's odd. It's like, I can tell when she's not really connected into something. And I could tell that she was doing what needed to be done and saying what needed to be said, but she wasn't fully like in it. And I judge that as, you know, she is taking this on as her own trauma and then also simultaneously trying to support me in my trauma. But again, you see how it's like you're still, you have to think for everybody else. Like you're still thinking for everybody else. There's no rest. There's no rest. There's no rest.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
I've always thought of Black media as a place where we are represented and also protected, as a place where we are uplifted and empowered. And I know that that is sometimes more shown in potential than in actuality, but on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, we get to see it in real time. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. So the next day, our flight was later in the evening, so we had the day. And we went to the beach. I saw a friend of mine. I told her what happened, and she was appropriately dismayed. When we got back from having some food, the receptionist sent me the footage, and I saw what I had convinced myself didn't take place. I opened the file, and there was a man of darker skin with his shirt tied around his face so that only his eyes were visible, with his locks sprouting from his head and shorts on. And it was the same exact person, and he was leaving our room running. And I fell to my knees in what I can only describe as brutal relief. Brutal because the relief doesn't bring you relief, but it affirms for you something that was imperative that you have affirmed. And I wanted it to not be real, even though I knew it was. And I sent that to my mom, and, we went on our flight. And the flights that we were taking, we had like a very arduous route. And we ended up on a flight, we ended up in a 5-hour layover in Boston. Of course, we're tired, we're irritable. We had to fly all day. And, when you're irritable, there's just not, we know this, you get hangry, you get tired, you get, I don't know what tiredry. But the effort, if any, was ever made to console, to make me feel like I was loved, that wasn't there. That was gone now. And that's the doozy of being with people who don't have empathy in a real way, because there's a limitation. They have a limitation to how much empathy they're able to really draw from. And when they hit that tank, when they hit the bottom of that tank, it's not like you hit the bottom of the tank and it's just peace. No, like you hit the bottom of the tank and what you get back is the spark that would fly were iron to meet iron. We sat in that airport, and my mother
texted me to say that my aunt had come to visit her the day before. And my mom had been house-sitting for me. And my aunt and I had been estranged for about 6 months. I didn't like the way that she had treated my mom during my mom's birthday. I didn't like the way that she had continuously remixed conversations that we had had and misrepresented me to my mom for whatever reason, because I never really know why she would do that, but it was just so normal. And I had reached a point where I was simply just no longer okay with that. And I voiced my frustration with that. And she did not respond with any level of accountability or even curiosity about, well, how did we get here? It was just, you know, well, I love you and no one will love you more than I do, which is simply untrue, but also irrelevant. And I want you all to know that when you share with somebody how they are harming you or how they're making you uncomfortable, whatever, there is no reason for them to tell you about their feelings for you. They may have feelings about the situation. They may have a different version of the situation. Their perception may be different. But when people come back with some level of feelings, you know, relating to simply you, that is a deflection. Yes, it is. It's a deflection and it's unacceptable. And it does not move the conversation forward. In fact, it derails the conversation and dismisses it. So we never got past that. And I mean, on New Year's Eve, I did text her and say Happy New Year. And she did text me back. And I had done that because I was saying to myself, well, you know, we're going into a new year. Let's start off on the right foot. Let's step into this new year in a redemptive mindset. You know, let's see, you know, how we can go to that. But here we are. And I'm sitting in this airport in Boston. And my mother texted me to say, your aunt came to visit yesterday. And I told her what happened. And I said, well, did you tell her about the sexual assault? And she said, yes. Has she called you? And I said, no, she has not. And I know that some of you might be thinking like, well, Amanda, you're just expecting a lot from people. And I am. I wish people expected more from themselves. I expect a lot from myself. Even though people continuously tell me I'm falling short, I do expect a lot from myself. So I texted my aunt and I said, you know, I was very disappointed to hear that you knew what happened to me and you didn't call me. And it makes me feel like you don't know what love is. And her response to me was, well, I didn't call you because I didn't hear about it from you. I heard about it from your mom, per usual. And I went to therapy and the therapist told me that you don't love me. And y'all, I know, like, you probably like, why is she airing out family business? And it's really not even that. It's like, you know, my response to that was, fuck you. I don't consider my aunt family at this point. You heard I was sexually assaulted and your first response wasn't to call me and ask how I'm doing, but to center yourself? Are you kidding me? That's a... Again, another example of such a bereftness of morality that I literally can't believe we share the same blood. It's unconscionable to me. Unconscionable. Unconscionable. I don't have an aunt anymore. So many of us go through these experiences, and the hardest part of it is how alone we have to go through these experiences. That's the point of Me Too. And the thing about Me Too, though, is that you don't have to have had to go through these experiences to still just be a fucking human and show up for somebody in a very genuine, empathetic way. We have all experienced harm of some kind. And what most people are afraid of is tapping into their own experience of harm in order to connect with somebody else. So they simply just don't tap in at all and they shut down. And now that person is shut out. And I'm sitting in this Boston airport realizing that this is where we are. We get on the flight and, you know, later in the flight, this was still rattling around in my head. It's still rattling around in my head. You know, I can hear it. It's like a, you know, like a ping pong, ping, 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 ping. Like it's just rattling around in my head that this is what I'm dealing with right now. Not even the part of the fact that I was assaulted. The fact that this is where my family is behaving like this? And I turned to my ex and I said to him, you know, I'm just really upset about my aunt. And he was watching something and just, you know, took his headphones off and was like, what? I said, you know, I'm just very upset about my aunt. He's like, okay. I said, you know, I can't believe that's what she would say to me. And he just looked at me with a blank stare. And I was like, you know, can you give me any, you know, words of support? He's like, I already did. Why are we still talking about this? I said, this happened like 2 hours ago. What do you mean? Why are we still talking about this? It's still on my mind. Well, you need to learn to lock doors. And that's what he said to me. You guys, you got to be careful not to allow yourself to align with people who have no bottom, who have no floor, who have no red line. He said that to me because my addressing of his lack of empathy hurt him. And his trigger is to then hurt you. My mother does this all the time. And I just thought that was really mean. You know, I just thought that was really mean and just a very unkind thing to say to me. And I said that to him. I said, that was really mean and that was very unkind. And he said, you're not the only one going through a traumatic experience. And, you know, in true people pleaser fashion, I accepted that as a sufficient explanation and response for having said that to me.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
I've always thought of Black media as a place where we are represented and also protected, as a place where we are uplifted and empowered. And I know that that is sometimes more shown in potential than in actuality, but on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, we get to see it in real time. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. We got to Kenya, and I'm not going to go into the details of when my mother turned left in her ability to show up in support, but she did. And in that, I said, you know, I think it's best that I just don't talk to you right now and preserve myself. And I asked my ex to continue to check on my mother. And I was really appreciative of that Kenya trip because I feel like had we left and come directly home, this trauma, this horror it would have been so concentrated. I remember as we, you know, laid in the bed and I iced his hand, you know, as the sun started to creep up into the next day after this took place. And I said to him, are we going to be okay? Because something in me told me that we were not going to be okay. That this incident was fracturing more than his hand. Because now the conversation is, well, he's going to feel like he didn't protect you. Well, he didn't. But I don't fault him for that. I more so am, if anything, I'm more annoyed by the fact that we did not sleep the way we normally sleep because he was being passive and dismissive about a conversation that I felt was important to me. And had I been heard, then we would have been encoiled. And that would have made this impossible for this intruder. But it is symbolic, though, that the conversation that we were having was one that was very integral to our connectivity as a couple. It wasn't like a breakup conversation or anything like that, but it was very personal to us. And so our inability to have a conversation that would bring us closer literally allowed us to sleep apart. And that is what allowed someone to come and invade my body. And so what goes on after this is, you know, we go to Kenya, we're in Kenya, and, you know, you're just distracted by all of the events of Kenya and the beauty and the majesty of Kenya and this kind people that we were around. And I am the queen of, you know, let's just make the best of it because we're here. And, you know, I mean, I'm trying to, you know, he's having me massage his hands. And, you know, we met this woman who recognized me and she had turned out to be a physician. And I'm having her do, like, you know, a field exam on this man's hand. Does it feel fractured? And she's like, well, I mean, if it was fractured, he would not be able to just, like, casually be here moving it. And it was, again, I feel like the Kenya trip was so necessary because it allowed there to be a beat between this terrible scenario and then going home. It allowed there to be a beat to break it up. But we're going to have to go home. And sure enough, we go home. And the day that we get home, he goes to the VA and he gets an x-ray and the hand is fractured. It had been fractured. And I don't know how he was massaging and having me massage a fracture. And they said that he would need surgery. In the wake of him getting the surgery that injured his hand, he was then let go from his job as an audio engineer. And he learned later that apparently the reason he was let go was because of this surgery. I'm saying this because it was that I am now the reason that he is fired. I am now the reason he has to get surgery. You understand what I'm saying? And at this point, I'm still not speaking to my mother. I still have not heard from my aunt. And then when I do speak to my mother, she is very defensive about my asking, why haven't you asked how I'm doing? And so then I, again, have to disconnect from that. And I say, you know, Amanda, you're going to have to go get some level of healing for this. And I called my therapist who at the time, you know, she was always my therapist for a long time, but she had somewhat retired her practice. And so I would just call her kind of like, you know, PRN, you know, like when I needed to. And I called her and I spoke to her, but there was an energy about that phone call that just felt like, okay, we had a call and now it's done. And it's like, this didn't feel like a thing that I could have one call about and it'd be done. Like it felt like there needed to be, you know, consistent conversation. But I can tell you that she probably did not feel there needed to be because I did not express enough hurt. I didn't express enough woe. And she said to me, I said, why am I not falling to pieces? Why am I like, okay? And she said, well, I think at this point you have done so much therapy that you have the tools. You have the tools to have things happen to you without letting them happen to you. And perhaps that is the case. You know, I told my closest friends and it was fascinating how many people simply didn't know to say, I'm sorry that happened to you. And so I would say to people, you know, before I would share this, I would say to them, the only response, the first response should be, I'm sorry this happened to you. But you would tell people and they would be like, oh my God, You know, and you would tell people and they would be like, nah. You would tell people and they would reply, oh, well, I got raped too. And I feel like that's unfortunate. And it's indicative of our disconnect from each other. We have such a hard time seeing other people. I really pride myself on being able to see people in their hurt. I'm really good at that. I'm really good at that. And I know that's because I'm an empath, but I'm really good at that. And I didn't feel seen in mine. And I feel like it's because I didn't know how to show it. But I also don't feel like I should have to. You know, I just feel like, why do I have to, like, I don't know. Why do I have to, I guess, I don't know. I mean, I guess what I'm asking for is for people to read my mind. And I guess that's not fair either. But I just would have liked to have been checked on. I would have liked there to have been a more concerted effort at gathering me. You know, it's like for colored girls, I was missing something. Something promised. A lying on of hands, fingers near the forehead, strong, making me whole, the holiness of myself released. I found God in myself and I loved her. I found God in myself and I loved her. I found God in myself and I loved her. And this is for colored girls who've considered suicide, but are moving to the ends of their own rainbows. That's what I wanted. And the unfortunate truth is that we don't know how to do that all the time. We don't. We don't know how to do that all the time. You know, my uncle and all of his on pointness, he like texted me after and I asked him, I said, I haven't heard from you since this happened. And he said, oh, well, I knew you were in the good hands of a Navy man. Like, it's just the willingness of everybody to pass the buck to everybody. It's the text culture of like, well, I texted you, so that should be good enough. It's not. It's not good enough. We're having real human experiences. We've become so digitized in not only how we communicate with each other in this machine, but even in how we like live. You know, like it's digital. Are you okay? It's not it. It's not it. And I went to Reiki. And when I went to Reiki, the healer said to me, you know, you've gone through something traumatic, but it's no longer in your mind, but it's in your body. And so you're going to have to sweat it out. I'm fortunate enough to have a sauna. So I spent the next 3 weeks getting up every single morning. She told me I needed to do it for 21 days. I spent the next 3 weeks. I got up every morning and I sat in that sauna for 20 minutes and I watched The Last Airbender. I did a rewatch of The Last Airbender. I sat in that sauna for 20 minutes and sweated out this trauma. And then I would get in the shower and take a cold shower. And then I would do a headstand for 3.5 minutes. This was my regimen every day for 3 weeks. And, you know, I asked Yvonne to go as well, and he went one time, but we never really, I feel, had a real conversation about any of this. And eventually I told my mother that we simply just couldn't speak unless she went to therapy. And she went kicking and screaming, but she went. The saving grace in all of this was that my mother had called my uncle's ex-wife, who was the only person in my family who truly saw the immensity of what took place and her responsibility as someone who loves me. The only one. And she was able to get the balance cleared. She got me on the phone with the commissioner, the police commissioner. She had the head of the Board of Tourism contact me. She made me feel seen and loved and heard. She spoke the words that needed to be spoken while doing the actions that needed to be acted. And I will forever hold her in high praise. And she will be forever favored for how she came through for me. And it seemed like it was something that she wasn't having to figure out how to do because it was simply the right thing to do. And, you know, as you know, my ex and I, we ended up parting ways in July of last year. And there was always a certain contempt for that experience, that time, which makes complete sense. My mother has since apologized for her lack thereof, her inability to mother me through such a terrifying experience. I was told that my aunt later said that this happened to me because of karma.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
I've always thought of Black media as a place where we are represented and also protected, as a place where we are uplifted and empowered. And I know that that is sometimes more shown in potential than in actuality, but on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, we get to see it in real time. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and bliggity Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
The Last Dose.
So, you know, when you see people walking around, you don't know what they're dealing with. And we hear that all the time. You don't know what they're dealing with. You don't know what they're experiencing. You don't know what's going through their minds. And we're all in this like main character situation, this main character movie where we really be thinking like, it's just me. And I'm, you know, then we have to always check ourselves. I still managed to write and produce and star in a political comedy documentary last year, In Amanda We Trust. You know, I still managed to pay my bills. I still managed to exist and to grow and to do my radio show and to expand. And I think sometimes people see that and they think that that is an indicator that you do not need their attention. But I think what a lot of people need to understand is that when you're someone like me, you are going to do, you're always going to be doing what you need to do for yourself because you're not expecting anyone to come save you. You have to save yourself. God forbid I find myself in a situation where I can't save myself because I don't know. I don't know. I like to think I can name three people off the top of my head that I feel like, you know, could get it done, but you just never know. You just never know. But to anyone who's listening, who did their best at showing up for me in this time, thank you. Thank you. For anyone listening who has been in this situation before, I see you. Me too. And for anyone who's listening that may consider themselves to be one of the people who may not have shown up correctly or just in an enough way, there is no time like the present. There's no time like the present to atone, to create space, to carve out the compassion that needed to be there. And I hope that you will extend yourself to do so because I'm promising you that that person on the other side, they will be so appreciative to receive it. They will. Because this type of thing doesn't leave you. It doesn't leave you. I mean, you manage or you get through it, but it never leaves you. Like I said, I can still feel this foreign phalange inside of me. It never leaves you. And I'm an actor. You know, my sense memory skills, my Stanislavski is popping through the roof. It never leaves you. But the best you can do is have the people around you also never leave you. And it doesn't mean that they have to keep talking about it. It doesn't mean that we have to keep bringing it up, but it does mean that you may need some handling with care. You may need some intentional friending. And you may need to be held. And I encourage you to ask for it. And I didn't. Not enough. Which is why I feel like I'm not allowed to have any type of resentment. But I don't want you to feel what I feel. So I encourage you to ask for what you need. Because you deserve it.